Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest on today's show is Steve Hindy, founder of Showing Animals Respect and Kindness, or SHARC, National Animal Welfare Organization concerned with halting and or educating the public about pigeon shoots, rodeos, bullfighting, and canned hunts, among other issues. Hindy launched SHARC in 1993, bringing an unusual background to the enterprise, certainly as founders of animal welfare organizations go, involving his history as an avid hunter and fisherman. Redemption tales aren't uncommon among those who work on behalf of animals, and Hindy has spoken openly and often about the catalyst for his transformation, witnessing two pigeon shoots. In the same way that Hindy's story reflects an unusual narrative, SHARC tends to work on atypical issues and campaigns and is seen as early innovators in using technology, including drones, to carry out investigations and document various forms of cruelty and abuse. The current focus of SHARC's efforts is ending steer tailing in Illinois. Steer tailing is a practice in which a person on a horseback pursues a running steer, grabs its tail, and attempts to bring the animal to the ground. So there'll be plenty to discuss when I speak with Steve Hindy in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Meanwhile, coming up later, I'll speak with John Thomas, also known as the Vegan Bodybuilder, a popular influencer in the vegan and bodybuilding spaces, who will be emceeing the food demos presented at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest happening this Saturday, November 8th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Perry Harvey Senior Park. By the way, WMF will have a table there as well. Plan to attend Veg Fest part of the day, so please come by the WMF table and say hello. Meanwhile, today we'll hear a bit about John Thomas and his background and get a sense of how the day of food demos will go at Veg Fest and maybe more when he joins us later in today's show. Right now, though, let's discuss SHARC, again, an acronym for Showing Animals Respect and Kindness, with founder Steve Hindy. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Steve Hindy to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Steve.
Hello, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Very happy to be here.
That's great. Well, meanwhile, thanks and congratulations on more than three decades of exposing abuse and cruelty and working hard to protect our animal friends.
Happy to do it.
Having hosted this show for a shorter time than that, but a while, 20-plus years, I've noticed that some of our most effective animal advocates underwent transformations of one kind or another. Often this has involved rejecting habits or passions that these folks embrace as part of local culture or often family traditions. So your story would seem to be a textbook example of this pattern. Can you talk a little bit about your early years and your family's attitude towards animals?
Well, it's kind of a split thing, like I guess a lot of people, you know, they've got the family cat or dog or bird or whatever that they care very much about, spend a lot of money on to care for them, veterinary care and all that kind of thing. But then there's a line between that and animals that you're taught to fish for or hunt or, you know, whatever. And so that, you know, I think that was kind of a standard upbringing, and certainly in the areas where I grew, grew up in Minnesota, you know, you had the animals that you killed and you had the animals that you cared for. And, but then I, at one point, saw live pigeon shooting in Pennsylvania. And that was just an activity that was in opposition to everything that I, as a hunter fisherman, believed in, or that all my fellow hunter fishermen claimed to believe in, you know, fair chase, killing what you eat, you know, some of that basic, those basic tenements are what we claim to stand by. And, but the pigeons, you know, there was no fair chase. They were being tossed out of a box and shot at close range, and they were not being eaten. They were being thrown away as like garbage, even though many of them were still alive. And the fact that they had children loading up the boxes that the birds are tossed out of, and then picking up the dead and the dying, and the kids were taught to, you know, like wring their necks, pull their heads off, stomp them, or throw them away alive when they got tired of hours and hours and hours of killing. It was something that violated everything that I claimed to live by as a hunter fisherman. And I just I wasn't gonna be part of that, because these guys, you know, I threw it. One of these guys said, "You're a hunter fisherman. You're just like us." And I said, "I'm not like you." But as I thought about it, as I really thought about it, I was enough like them. We as hunter fishermen was enough like them that I didn't want to be part of it anymore. I decided I was definitely on the wrong team. I should be helping to save animals, not kill them.
So, Steve, what do you think at that moment, and especially, you know, grappling with the fact of, am I different from these guys or am I the same as these guys? What do you think triggered your reaction to say, hey, I'm not taking part of this, and I'm going to kind of go a different direction here?
Yeah, it really wasn't the moment. It was about a year.
Okay.
Because I had spent 30 years in blood sports. I had my equipment. I had my habits. I had my memories and my plans for the future. And that was not something that I just tossed overboard. It really took about a year. And I remember it was the second time that I went to Hagen's. As I was driving home from it, I would almost be able to show you the stretch of road on I-80 in Ohio when I did finally say, okay, that's it. I'm done. And, you know, because it wasn't something that I gave up easily or quickly. I have to admit that. But it was, I think it was inevitable from the time I saw that first Hagen's pigeon shoot in Pennsylvania to a year later. After I saw the second one, there was no going back for me after that.
So it sounds like it was gradual. During the course of that year, from first one to second one, were you talking with other people? It sounded like you were obviously pondering this and giving it some serious thought, just, you know, yourself. But were you having any kind of conversation with anybody saying, hey, you know, I'm not sure this is a world I can still be in, or anything about what you were considering making that kind of a change?
Yeah, I was talking to a lot of people on both sides of the issue, you know.
Yeah.
On the animal side, you know, I was hearing people, you know, just, I remember one guy, I was talking about fishing, and the guy said to me, he said, do you think you would enjoy it as much if the fish had vocal cords? And that really got me thinking. You know, that was a hell of a thing to say. But
just because of the idea of the fish expressing kind of what they were experiencing, like,
right,
made it a
right.
different ball game, kind of.
Yeah, it certainly did. And meanwhile, while I was talking to the people on my side, my discussions with them were along the lines of, look, I've learned about these pigeon shoots. This is everything that we say we're opposed to. We should stand together against this because these guys are making us all look bad. And other than my brother, there was no other hunter fisherman that I found that was willing to actually stand up. You know, they would go, oh, well, that doesn't sound right at all. But they wouldn't do anything about it. And you see that so much, even more in the world today, that people, you know, are so rarely willing to do something about the things that they think are wrong in the world. Or maybe, you know, they make a social media post and they feel like a hero. But actually going out, you know, on the front lines and dealing with whatever the issue is, you find very, very few people that will do that. So, you know, I was talking to people on both sides of the issue, and everything was pushing in one direction. But I was pushing in the other direction. I did not want to quit what I had done for 30-plus years. I did not want to quit. I'm not going to pretend that I had some sudden enlightenment.
Yeah.
No, it was a year, and I was fighting it the whole way. But it was, you know, in talking to other people and just really finally having a real honest talk with myself, I had to walk away.
Yeah, it's interesting that with all that you had to ponder in that history. I mean, some of those things, that's what I've really found over the years, talking to all kinds of people on the show, is sometimes it's just like cultural, either local culture or family culture, and that's just kind of like, hey, what we do is hunt. We hunt and fish, and there wouldn't be, for most people, cause to ponder that because that's just what we've always done, and that's what we do, and that's what we do later when we get together when we're maybe a little bit older. And so it's interesting that I guess it was particularly the pigeon shoots that triggered the more fundamental change.
Yeah, with the pigeon shoots, it wasn't even just the killing of the animals, but it was the involvement of the children.
Yeah.
It was the attitudes of the people who were involved. It was the Ku Klux Klan showing up to support the pigeon shooters and skinheads and every kind of disgusting, disturbing kind of humanity being on that side. That, you know, and I'm going, really? Are you're really, you know, a part of me is saying, you really going to stick with this bunch? And, you know, in the end, I just couldn't. But I will say that I do understand, whether it's a rodeo person, you know, even a pigeon shooter, cockfighters, all these guys, I understand that if you were raised this way and you've been in this bubble for years or decades, as was the case with me, this is kind of all you know. And it's difficult. It's difficult to walk away. And yet, you know, when you really, if you're going to be honest with yourself and you're going to try and be the best person you can be in life and try and help everybody else to be the best people they can be, you know, all of this abuse, the pigeon shoots, the cockfighting, the government slaughters of animals and so on, you know, the meat industry and on it goes. I mean, it's something we should not be taking part of. And you know, like with regard to meat, it's how bad it is for the environment, how bad it is for us, our own bodies.
Yeah.
I understand people being stuck where they came from. And so we try and, you know, we do try to help by simply showing what's going on rather than just feeding people rhetoric and asking them to just accept it. We focus on filming what it is that we are concerned about or opposed to, and then letting everybody else take a look at it and make up their own mind.
Yeah, and I'm curious, before we move on here, over the years, I imagine you probably thought back about, you know, how pivotal, obviously, these pigeon shoots were in that period, from pigeon shoot one to pigeon shoot two, when you made your kind of ultimate transformation. But if you sometimes thought, what if there hadn't been a pigeon shoot or those pigeon shoots, or hadn't been there and wasn't basically kind of horrified or had this jarring experience? Would something else have come along because maybe you were ready in another way that you didn't realize at the time?
Well, you know, probably. I think that it probably would have happened. My wife would say things like, you know, she sometimes would come out fishing with me and we'd catch fish. And every now and then she'd say something like, well, you know, does it bother you at all, you know, to kill these fish? And I'd say, well, no, I'd use the old line, no, fish don't have feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember her saying to me one time, well, if they don't have feelings, why did they fight?
Yeah.
little things like that. I was getting ready for shark fishing because shark fishing, I had a boat out on Long Island. I was a shark fisherman for the last few years of my fishing activities. And I was getting ready for fishing and I had gone and gotten a little case that from a grocery store, actually, they you know, like a milk case, that we would put frozen fish in there and it would set up a chum line, which was what would attract sharks to the boat. And I told this lady at the grocery store that I was, you know, that I wanted it. And she asked what for. And I told her, and I thought she'd say, oh, that's cool. And she said, why don't you just leave the sharks alone?
Mm.
and then, you know, the thing that really got me fishing, most fish, they have eyes that don't move. I mean, they're just, the eyes are there. They don't blink. They don't move. Sharks are not that way.
Yeah.
And when I started catching sharks, sharks' eyes actually move. So when you would be getting a shark close to the boat, you could see that the shark was watching you. And for some reason, you know, I thought, I started out in Minnesota, that's where I grew up, you know, catching panfish and then somewhat larger fish, and so it went. And I was going for the lot bigger and bigger fishes because it started to feel like it wasn't really a fair game. You know, me catching a fish that was a half pound or a pound or 10 pounds or 20 pounds, you know, I've got the boat, I've got all my stuff, and we got this fish. So I thought, well, you know, sharks won't be like that. But sharks were more like that than the other ones because they would actually look at you.
Yeah.
And boy, that was a problem for me.
Yeah. That's a creepy, probably upsetting experience.
Yeah, I mean, I killed a lot of them, but it, you know, this was deep in me. I mean, I started fishing when I was about 4 or 5 years old, and it was in me. I kind of ate and slept fishing.
Yeah,
I was either talking about the last trip or planning for the next one.
Right.
So it was very difficult to walk away from the hunting. Somewhat, not so much, but the fishing was deep in.
Yeah.
So I understand the problem with people who are currently involved in abusive activities. If they've been doing it all their life, it is kind of all they know, just for some of them.
Yeah.
One guy recently in steer tailing, he admitted, he said, I'm an addict. He said, I admit it.
Yeah.
It's true. You know, there were things like musky fever, mako fever, king fever for king salmon, buck fever for deer hunters. You know, it's the fever means they're addicted to it.
Sure. Well, we'll come back to the steer tailing and some other things in a moment, but I think we have some callers that might want to get into the conversation. Let me first say to people who might just be tuning in a bit late, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Chelsea. If you just did tune in, my guest is Steve Hendy, founder of Showing Animals Respect and Kindness, or SHARC, a National Animal Welfare Organization. And we're sort of talking about his history and transformation from hunter and fisher into animal advocate. If you'd like to ask him a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. All right, let's get one of our callers involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals on WMNF with Steve Hendy.
Hi, yes, I want to applaud your guest. I've never heard of you, Steve, but I very much appreciate you sharing your story and what has caused a transformation in your opinion. One comment, however, really caught my ear, and that's what I'm calling about. And my tone may sound confrontational. That's just because it angers me, but I do not mean to be confrontational with you. The perpetuation of, I think you said you send out the videos and you let people decide for themselves. I just emailed PETA and some other organizations that I signed petitions for on animal abuse and animal cruelty issues, imploring them, stop sending these images. We don't need the images to know how horrific it is. I compare it to the 9/11 video. How many times do newscasts need to show not the planes hitting the Twin Towers? We get it. I just really want to know why organizations such as yourself, like I said, I've never heard of your organization, so I'm not directly saying, but if you use these type of videos, I feel you are destroying the dignity of these animals. And how would you like it if somebody humiliated you and was violent towards you and perpetuated it by sending it out to everybody on their email list? And, the other thing I want to say is I didn't used to have such a strong opinion on this until the last couple of years when I realized that there's some very sick people on the dark web who get sexual satisfaction out of seeing living beings being crushed. Thank you.
Okay, so, caller, I don't know if you want to hang tight in case there's conversation back and forth, but I'll let Steve respond, of course. My initial thought is sometimes videos and things that are made for that, I totally understand what you're saying, but sometimes people do the kind of work that Steve does and others are documenting things that otherwise people could just say, well, this is what happened behind those doors or in that plant or backstage at this place or whatever. And, you know, until you have some kind of visual evidence, then it's just somebody saying something he said, she said. So a lot of this time, I think this is to help document cruelty and abuse in ways that otherwise couldn't
Duncan, I agree with what you're saying. However, I think they can say, if you'd like to see the proof, we'll give you the proof. I'm not objecting to taking the images, your undercover folks and stuff who do that at factory farms. My problem is with sending the images around the world on the web.
Okay, well, let's let Steve respond to that, and I appreciate your comment. Absolutely. Thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure. First of all, I appreciate the comment. I don't take it as confrontational, and at the same time, I'll mention that I love confrontation. Confrontation, you know, having people's beliefs or methods or whatever challenged is... In my own life, I had what I was doing for over 30 years challenged, and I ended up going the other way. So I'm very much a fan of being challenged, and because it makes us look at what we're doing too. Now, we've had many, many conversations about this in Shark, but I will say right up front, the very foundation of Shark has been to go out and capture, to document with, usually with video, what's going on so that there can be no doubt whatsoever of what it is. And it's amazing to me how many times people don't really understand what you've been using words to try to describe. For instance, when we used to go to the animal rights conventions, we stopped it because we found it to be frankly unproductive, but when we used to go and we would show video of bullfighting, because we had gone to Mexico and we had documented bullfights and used the footage, used the documentation to knock American companies out of sponsorships in Spain and Mexico. Those companies included, for instance, Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola. And by getting that video proof of what bullfighting was, we got those companies and others to stop sponsoring, stop giving those people money. And what was amazing to me was we would be showing the bullfight footage, and people who were in animal protection would say to us, oh, my God, are they killing him? I had no idea that they killed the bull. I thought they just went in there and danced with the bull. They thought that people involved in animal protection, to the point that they went to animal rights conventions, didn't know that bulls got killed in bullfighting. I'll say something else, and because this always has hung with me. There are no words that I can put out to describe the horror of bullfighting or pigeon shoots or steer tailing or cockfighting. Words cannot paint the picture that is as horrible as the truth. And so many, you know, as I mentioned earlier, people today so rarely actually take effective action. I feel sometimes like animal protection is almost dead because nobody wants to do more than make a post on social media, which is frankly not worth very much. And seeing what's actually going on, that's your best chance of getting people involved, in our opinion. So we've had this discussion many times, especially like with the steer tailing now. You know, we go out and we do it almost every weekend during the season. We're out going after these steer tailers. Even my own team sometimes says, hey, we've been to this place, you know, 10 times. Why do we have to do it again? We have to do it again to show that it is absolutely still going on. It's absolutely still indefensible. And no, you got to stay on top of it. It's like a war correspondent, right? The Vietnam War went on for years. Well, those correspondents were still out there showing you the horrible images. And if they hadn't been, would that war have ever ended? Would it have ended when it did? So it's, believe me, it hurts us. We lose a little bit of our souls every time we're out at a cockfight or a pigeon shoot or a steer tailing or an American rodeo or whatever. It hurts us. You never get used to this stuff. And there's so many images that you'll never unsee. I mean, my first pigeon shoot still burns in me. But that burning is it's kind of like my atomic pile that keeps me energized, keeps me moving. Because of the things that I have seen with my own eyes, I will not walk away from this. And I won't walk away from the front line. I wish other people would get these images burned in their soul, have nightmares about it like we do, because then maybe they would do more. Because I hear people say, oh, if I see it, I'll have nightmares about it. And I say, good. You're not the one that's being tossed out of the box to be shot. You're not the one that's having your tail literally ripped off or your leg broken or your horn broken and no veterinary care. You're not the one. I don't mind if you lose some sleep if thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of animals have relief. You can survive a nightmare. They're not surviving.
Okay, caller, I'm not sure if you're still on the line. If you are, do you have a brief comment? We got to move on with some other stuff here, but I thought I'd give you a chance to respond to his response.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, just two comments quickly. One, I think this is a generational issue. I'm an older millennial, and I suspect you are not. And with the new AI tools that have been released even in the last several weeks, people aren't going to believe images are real anyways anymore. And the second comment I have to make, I do believe words can be more persuasive, especially in the day of AI videos being altered. And the proof of that is Thomas Paine, back when our country was founded. Thank you.
All right. Thanks again for your call. Appreciate it.
And I hope I didn't sound confrontational. I feel very strongly about it.
No, it's just, I think it's just a different sort of opinion and philosophy about how video and imagery of that kind can be used and what the pluses and minuses are. But let me get to
In my case, it's probably not generational. I'm 71 years old, so I'm pretty old.
Okay. All right. Cut your bragging, Steve. But anyway, I'm going to put another caller on the thing, and then we'll get to some other questions that I had. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Steve Hindy on WNF on Talking Animals.
Yeah, first of all, Duncan, let me say that I have been concerned about your health recently, hearing you struggling during shows, and wish there was a God I could pray to magically heal you and make you 30 again.
Okay.
But you sound better today.
All right. Well, I appreciate the concern and glad I sound better today.
Yeah, good.
I'm no spring chicken either, unfortunately. So,
Duncan, you're a sacred object and we want you alive and healthy as long as possible. Secondly, that last caller is a classic concern troll. It is absolutely ludicrous. It's like people saying that there shouldn't have been a photojournalist in Vietnam. Give me a break. And Steve, let me tell you something. As a former member of Earth First, who climbed up in the redwood tree with Julia Butterfly Hill, and the timber companies were threatening to shoot us and blow us out of the tree with a massive helicopter, and at the bottom of the tree were all these rednecks with their guns threatening to kill or rape Julia, I got to tell you, man, it takes guts to do activism on the part of non-pet animals. And everybody should be doing what you're doing, even in your own neighborhood. In my neighborhood, there's all these native eastern cottontail bunnies. My neighbors poison them. I rain, I was going to say the H word, I go after them in the most confrontational way possible when I find out that they're poisoning and killing the eastern cottontail bunnies, telling me that the bunnies are vermin. And one of my neighbors, this was a MAGA red hat, said that the bunnies can get in your attic and destroy your insulation. Give me a break. The non-pet animals are treated worse than humans treat each other. It's a part of anthropogenic mass extinction. You're doing God's work. Don't let anybody deter you.
All right, Steve, thanks for your call and thanks for your kind words. I appreciate both. So let me read an email that came in the wake of, I think, the conversation with the first caller, says, if you don't see the cruelty, you won't act on the cruelty. Steve is doing such a great job. Thank you. That's another point.
Well, but, you know, I understand the first caller's thoughts.
Yeah.
I'm not sure she's a troll. But for the Earth Firster veteran, I want to say thank you for your service. We try to be open-minded about this. Everybody has different opinions. I don't want to just put down anybody's pretty much, unless it's some pigeon shooter, you know. Yeah, I'm talking about animals like the vermin. It's always interesting when a white person comes along and says, oh, those animals are non-native. Because if they're a white person, so are they.
Yeah.
And to this country. So but opinions, everybody has one, and I want to listen to all of them, and I want to give them the respect and consideration that they deserve.
Well, I appreciate that, and just because we've kind of ventured off into some parts of this conversation that have been important and I think informative, but probably took some time that I didn't expect. Let's get right to come right back to steer tailing, which is something we definitely wanted to focus on at some point in the conversation. So I kind of briefly described it. Maybe you could describe it, you know, what exactly is steer tailing, and then, you know, what your the focus of Shark's efforts to stop it involve.
Sure. Steer tailing, and people can see it for themselves if they go to steertailing.com, S-T-E-E-R, tailing.com. Steer tailing involves a steer being let out of a chute, and the steer runs along, is being chased along a wall. The wall is on the steer's right side. A rider on horseback comes up on the left side, grabs the steer's tail, and then rides the horse ahead and to the left, which means that the steer gets pulled around to the side. And now steers run about as well sideways or backwards as we do at full speed, which is not very well. And so they, you know, what they're trying to do is bring these, you know, 600, 650-pound animals crashing to the ground, legs flailing, you know, they fall on their heads, their necks, their backs. They break horns, they break legs. They can break their backs. One thing that oftentimes happens is it's called degloving, where the tail literally rips off of the tailbone. So the flesh part of the tail rips off the tailbone. This is extremely painful and sets up what could be a potentially deadly infection, because the tail's backed by the anus and they're stressed animals. They're, you know, they're pooping down their backside, and it's just a horrible, horrible situation. And then on top of that, these animals typically get no veterinary care. Now, in Illinois, that's completely illegal. I mean, so much of this is illegal. They will bring in, like the last time we were out, they brought in 41 steers, which would be run, you know, in the neighborhood of 500 to 600 times in the course of the day. So each individual animal, on average, is being run 10, 11, 12 times. But because they have no particular order that they bring the animals back, the animals that are most compliant may be run. What we've seen individual animals run as many as 24 times in a single day, with the intention of sending them crashing to the ground every time. And so what happens is that the injuries, you know, injuries usually happen when the animals are when they're exhausted, their balance is off. They're, you know, everything. They're just not able to protect themselves in the same way anymore, and so you have all these horrible, horrible injuries. And the steers get no consideration whatsoever. Horses, by the way, are also the horses are being beaten because these guys are not very good. They're not good horsemen, so. When the rider does something wrong, they beat the horse. Mm. They blame the horse. And so between the beatings, the overwork, you know, running them to exhaustion, the lack of veterinary care, the constant electrocuting, they electroshock them to keep them going because they're run to the point of exhaustion. All of this is illegal according to Illinois law, clearly illegal. And yet the authorities don't want to do anything. I think some of them are just getting paid off. But all of the people involved in this activity are Latino. And this group of what basically are like street thugs, they're not representative of the Latino community. Latinos generally care as much about their animals as any other ethnicity. They're fine people. But you've got this group of thugs that is, you know, as soon as you say, hey, that's cruel, they go, oh, you're a racist. It's not racist to call out somebody for beating a horse or not providing veterinary care for animals with broken legs. I mean, it's so preposterous. And yet, you know, I'm a person, I strongly believe in what used to be called woke. But then woke became, in some cases, you know, just crazy, where you can't point at somebody who's a non-white and say, well, they did something wrong. But if they did something wrong, we should be able to say it. And so I'm kind of like this old school woke guy who's really upset about what new woke has become, where you can't say anything against a Latino, even though they're, you know, literally beating these animals to death. And so this is the biggest problem that we have. If this was a white guy that was doing it, we would be able to stop it much more easily. But you've got people, well, and the biggest name here is J.B. Pritzker. People have probably been seeing J.B. Pritzker on TV because he's making the most of it. He's up there, you know, calling out Donald Trump, which I think is just fine. There's a lot to call Donald Trump out about. But he's playing this card of, oh, I'm protecting immigrants from Donald Trump. Look, Trump, remember, Trump was a Democrat before he was a Republican. And Pritzker, you know, so Trump is just playing a game that works for him. And so is Pritzker. Pritzker is just another, and he's a billionaire. He's a billionaire, so he bought his way into politics, and he intimidates the media into not reporting this stuff. He intimidates anybody that he needs. He wants the Latino vote. He thinks the Latino vote is going to make him president in the next election. So he's not going to do anything. We've been filming this stuff. We've been providing documentation, clear video of this abuse for 4 years, and J.B. Pritzker won't do a thing.
So let me just ask a few quick questions back to steer tailing, more specifically, Steve, because we're sort of nearing the end of our time, and I just want to make sure we hit a couple things before we run out of time. So this seems oddly specific. Does this only happen in Illinois, or that just happen to be the focus of Shark's work at the moment in this regard?
No, it's like American rodeos, which are bad, just not nearly as bad. It's happening everywhere in many places around the country. So what we've done, we said we're going to start in Illinois. We're going to, you know, because clean up your own backyard first, and then we're going to move out to every other place. So, you know, things are slowly changing in Illinois, and we are getting ready to start branching out to a whole bunch of other places from coast to coast.
And how is the shark operation funded?
Poorly. we're very good in the field. We're very good at making issues move, but because that's where our focus is, we're very bad at fundraising. So anybody who wants to pitch in, feel free. We would love it. We need it. We're just not very good at that. Otherwise, we'd be in a lot more places. We'd have more people and so on.
So the website, for those who want to find out more and or donate, is sharkonline.org, if I'm not mistaken. Correct, Steve?
Yeah. And specifically, steertailing.com.
Okay, so these all had sort of their own dedicated websites.
Yeah, I mean, they're all going to be connected to sharkonline.org.
Right.
But if you want to find out more about a particular issue, you know, we've got websites up about pigeon shoots, cockfighting. Crushcockfighting.com is our cockfighting website. And by the way, let me quick mention, cockfighting is happening all across the country, probably a lot closer than any of your listeners believe. They're near them. And anybody who knows about an active cockfight pit, please let us know. They are illegal across the country, and we will come after them anywhere in the United States.
So that's widespread, and your efforts are widespread versus the moment like the steer tailing thing being focused in Illinois.
Right. Yeah. That's just a start there. But it's much easier for us to find the cockfights in the South and Southwest than in our area because we have a very strict law in Illinois about it. We're looking for them. We know they are in Illinois. We're just having a heck of a time finding them. So we go everywhere across the country and sometimes beyond.
Okay, well, I think that brings us sort of just about to the end of our time. We've been speaking with Steve Hindy. The organization is Showing Animals Respect and Kindness, or SHARC. The website is sharkonline.org, and they, of course, have social media and offshoot websites for certain campaigns that you can search for and find pretty readily. So, Steve, thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals, and good luck with the steer tailing efforts and other campaigns.
Duncan, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you. In a moment, I'll speak with John Thomas, the vegan bodybuilder, who will be emceeing the food demos offered throughout the day at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest, taking place this Saturday, November 8th, at Perry Harvey Senior Park from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. There are more in a moment on Talking Animals about that right here on WMNF. Right now, though, we're going to step into the Comedy Corner with the mighty Nick DiPaolo. Been a while since we've heard from him. Here's a relevant piece called Animal Activists from Nick DiPaolo, today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
I'm sick of activists. Everybody's a goddamn activist in Los Angeles. Everybody's like an animal activist. I love animals, too. But, you know, if I see one more person walking a dog with a coat on it, I'm going to stab him. I swear to God. That's the first sign of mental illness. You start dressing up your pets, okay? Take the snorkel jacket off the chihuahua. The dog was born with a coat. He doesn't need another one. It's like giving an alligator false teeth. Leave him alone. On the lawn, he licks his own balls. Let's buy him a tweed jacket. We don't even have kennels now. We have doggy hotels in this country. Did you see this? We got people sleeping on the streets in this country, yet somewhere there's a poodle pissed off because a maid didn't leave a liver snap on his pillow last night. I got a lady that lives next to me that talks to her pets like she thinks they're human. She's yelling at her dog last week. She's going, "Did you hear what I said? Did you hear what I said?" I go, "You know, I think his hearing's perfect. It's the English language that's throwing him off a tad. Maybe he can't hear you because he's wearing earmuffs and a hat."
All right, that was Nick DiPaolo in today's Comedy Corner, with a piece called Animal Activist, taken from his album Born This Way. Now it's time to talk with John Thomas about, among other things, his role emceeing the food demos offered throughout the day at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest, happening this Saturday, November 8th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Perry Harvey Senior Park. Let's hear more right now by welcoming John Thomas to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. I appreciate it. I know you've got a busy schedule you're juggling.
Yeah, always. What are we talking about today?
Well, before we get into some details of Saturday's Veg Fest, maybe you could give us a bit of a John Thomas bio. I'm guessing you weren't always known as the vegan bodybuilder.
Yeah, no, I definitely wasn't. I used to be more normal back in the day. I'm now more formally known on Instagram and online as the Bodybuilding Vegan. I am the largest vegan bodybuilder in the world. I weighed 270 pounds this morning, 6 feet tall. But this, for me, I think it started a lot longer. I think I was born vegan, but tricked by society into feeling like I needed to eat meat and eat dairy and eat eggs. I was around 10 years old when my best friend told me that if I ate a hamburger, I was in fact killing a cow. I immediately was met with some anger that she would say that to me, anger that, you know, everybody else does it, so why should I change? But then I realized pretty quickly she was right. So at 10 years old, I went vegetarian. At 13, I realized what happens with factory farming for cows and for chickens is really not any different than at slaughterhouses. So I decided to go vegan for a week at 13, and it's now been 20 years. I was about 15 years old when I found the sport of bodybuilding, and I've been able to combine the two, be able to combine veganism with bodybuilding as a way to show people that they can still be strong, they can still be powerful, they can still do anything in the fitness world, and be compassionate and have their values and their ethics line up with their actions. They don't have to kill animals to achieve literally any result they want in any sport.
All right. That makes absolute total sense to me. So tell me a little bit briefly, and then we'll get into VegFest stuff. Tell me a little bit about Vegan Squad Coaching. I assume that's kind of coaching consulting that you do?
Yeah. So we have a couple different things. We have the Vegan Squad Coaching, which is part of like a bigger umbrella. It's the Vegan Squad community. And in the Vegan Squad community, we welcome people from all walks of life, and we help them work on their physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional health. With that, our goal is basically to connect vegans around the world. I've been vegan for 20 years, and for a lot of that journey, probably about 75-80% of it, I didn't have any other vegan friends. I didn't really put it out there. I didn't have any communities in person or online that I could connect with. So we've built an online community. We're at about 250 members right now, where we interact daily, whether it's through live calls, through posts. And then we also, me and my closer team, we literally travel the country. I'm in North Carolina right now. I'll be in Florida by the end of today so that we can gear up for the VegFest this weekend on Saturday. But our goal is to help provide an open, warm, supportive, loving community for anyone on their vegan or pre-vegan journey.
All right. Well, that sounds great. And now that we're kind of, seems like we've circled back to VegFest. So let's talk a little bit about that. First of all, Tampa Bay VegFest, again, is happening this Saturday, November 8th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Perry Harvey Senior Park. And for those who might be unfamiliar, just more broadly, John, can you kind of just say what a food demo is?
Yeah, so the VegFest as a whole, there's going to be a ton of vendors. There's going to be speakers. It's going to be a fun family event for the whole day. I hadn't been to one until a few years ago, and I was kind of like, I don't know if it'll be for me. But there's kind of a bit of something for everybody. But for the food demos, I think those are especially useful because, you know, we can teach people why to go vegan or why to be more plant-based. But if we don't show them how, we're kind of creating this problem where they have this need that they want to fulfill, but they don't know how to do it. So with the food demos, we break down step-by-step exactly how to prepare the different foods to teach people some things and some skills that they can take home into their own kitchen after the event.
All right, cool. So you and four others will present food demos across the day at Saturday's VegFest. So the dishes being demoed include smoked salmon negrise, I think it's pronounced, Thai curry, bean chili, and chocolate pudding. That's one person doing demonstrating both of those, which I think is great. And Asian sesame noodles. Are you doing a demo yourself, Steve, or just kind of keeping the thing moving, emceeing it?
I think I'm just going to be doing the emceeing. I'll do the fun part. I'll do the talking. I'll let the real chefs do their thing. Like, if you want some, like, high-protein vegan recipes for bodybuilding, like, that's my style. But I think at this one, it's going to be more of just kind of the fun, you know, higher taste bud quality foods. And so I'll just be speaking to kind of walk through those steps while the real chefs are out there whipping up the dishes.
All right. Well, that sounds fair enough. So that sounds cool. Well, so let's let folks know that if they want to find out more about you, then go to bodybuildingvegan.com and find out more about VegFest and schedules and speakers and other activities, music, yoga, all kinds of stuff on tap, including, of course, the food demos themselves. It's TampaBayVegFest.com. So that'll get everybody, I think, fixed up on the info that they need. So, John, sorry, at one point I think I accidentally called you Steve. There's so many Steves today during the show. But thanks for joining us on Talking Animals, and we look forward to meeting you on Saturday.
Thank you for having me. Have the best day ever.
You too. Thanks again. All right, so we've certainly generated a mix of responses to the Steve Hendy interview. Got a string of emails and some concern about some of the things he was saying, especially as he got into sort of what some perceived as racial territory. And then, by contrast, one says, Steve Hendy is one of my heroes, and wishing all his visuals and billboards and videos could be constantly shown, etc. So that's, I guess, part of the point of presenting interesting and polarizing guests here on Talking Animals and more broadly on WMNF. So Coming up, meanwhile, on WNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, it's The Scoop, WNF's brief news recap. Then we shift back to music programming with Sam Ball holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C hosting the traffic jam from 3 to 6 p.m. And it just continues with great music throughout that on here on WNF 88.5 FM. So, meanwhile, right now, as a prize for naming that animal tune, I'll be offering something from the Talking Animals Vault. The first person calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's named that animal tune on Talking Animals on WNF. All right, if we have somebody to identify that name, that animal tune, we'll take that after the show is finished up, because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. My guest next Wednesday, November 12th, will be Dr. Jennifer Conrad, a veterinarian and founder of the Paw Project, and a longtime opponent of declawing cats. California recently passed a statewide ban on the declaw, feline declaw procedure, so this seemed like an ideal time to get caught up with Dr. Conrad about what's going on in other states, and of course discuss along the way what the procedure actually is and what it does to or for the cats, etc. So that'll be next Wednesday here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Invited to tune in for that show. Also invite you to visit TalkAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. Apple Podcasts are available too, as well as on other podcast platforms. Also links to our social media pages and more. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WNF Tampa, Brandon, Largo, Clearwater, Wiki Watching, and beyond. See you next Monday here at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Stay tuned for The Conversation.